This is Keep It Juicy, episode 87.
Hello, and welcome to Keep It Juicy, a weekly podcast that features experts on living a juicy life. What's a juicy life? It's a lifestyle for those who have put in a few miles and are ready to turn off-road, who are still learning and excited, who are fearless, or who are scared but dare anyway. Juicies are grown-ups, so some of our language may not be appropriate for children. Juicies are bold, passionate, and ready to squeeze every drop of juice out of life. I'm your host, Helen Mitternight. Are you ready? Let's keep it juicy. Hi, it's Helen Mitternight. Today we're talking with Chris Fagan. It's amazing she has any juicy left at all. She did a 48-day trek in the South Pole with just her husband, a 220-pound sled, and her thoughts to keep her company. The temperature got to 50 below, but Chris is bringing the heat with her thoughts on marriage, creativity, and having hot flashes when the weather is killing cold. Chris Fagan, today on Keep It Juicy. We have Chris Fagan here. Chris, welcome to Keep It Juicy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
So for my listeners, Chris has a Guinness World Record because she and her husband are the first American married couple to ski without guide, resupply, or other assistance to the South Pole, which basically means that Chris is the anti-Helen. So congratulations, first of all.
Thank you, Helen.
I'm sitting here. I went out this morning to get the newspapers and let the dogs out and instantly decided I'm in Charleston, South Carolina. It's in the 30s. The dogs were not getting a walk today. So I completely admire what you did. But my question to you is, why? What made you do this?
Right. Well, that is the big question, Helen. And to give you the short answer, you know, my husband and I were at a place in our lives where we were in our top physical shape. We had met while climbing Denali in Alaska, which is a high mountain, difficult level. And so we had this mountaineering background. And then for a decade, we had been ultra running together, which is running 30, 50, 100-mile races through the mountains. So we became really extreme kind of endurance athletes. So we had this great experience and we wanted to see, well, we're in our late 40s, we're at our peak, and what's the last kind of big thing we might want to do before our bodies start breaking down, which they kind of were starting to, you know, get little creaks and cracks. And at the same time, visit a sort of the most otherworldly place on earth. We thought of the South Pole and the North Pole, and we chose the South Pole because it's a little less dangerous than the North Pole. So there is land underneath the ice mass in Antarctica, and in the Arctic, it's all on water, which can, as climate change happens, some of the ice is melting, and you can and fall into these big open water leads, which is not the case. So yeah, we were looking for a big challenge and be able to go to some place that few people have ever gone and test our endurance and see something that most people in the world never have a chance to see.
So how long does something like that last?
Our expedition from the time that we officially started until we were at the South Pole was 48 days.
48 days?
48.
Of no guide, resupply, or other assistance.
That's correct. Yes. So we were on skis and we each were pulling 220-pound sleds. And those sleds contained all of the gear that we needed to survive from, you know, our tent and all of our food and fuel to be able to fuel our stoves, which we use to then melt snow and create water. So yes, it's a huge undertaking. And those 48 days to be able to do that, it was, you know, really 3 full years of planning and decades of endurance before that.
So I'm going to be talking about your relationship and your sort of self-discoveries in a minute, but just in terms of the physical stuff of the trip, what was the best part?
The best part of being in Antarctica was being in a place that was so amazingly pristine and pure and otherworldly. You're in a place where you turn 360 degrees around and all you see is white and there's nothing on the horizon. If it's a beautiful day, then it's a blue sky above. And it's just this open expansiveness. And when everything was going right and everything felt good, you could, you know, you're moving for 8 to 10 hours a day pulling this sled, and you almost get into this moving meditation. You're almost in this trance in the one of the most beautiful places on Earth. So that was.
So do you each have your own sled, or are the two of you sort of yoked in tandem?
We each have our own sleds, yes. And okay. And the way that we moved was in single file, made it an easier way to travel because the person in front was navigating and the person behind could just follow. Navigating takes a lot of brain power. So about every hour, hour and a half, we would switch leads. And that way one person got a little break, mental break, and they could sort of just enjoy the surroundings.
Probably physical break too, because you were probably trailblazing as well, right?
Yeah, it depended on the conditions. Sometimes it was a little more firm, so that wasn't the case. But other times it was a little more the snow was a little softer, and that would be true. Yep.
And did you see any cool animals?
You know, in Antarctica, the only animals that live there are on the coast, which is where the penguins and the sea lions are. And we started slightly in from we actually started where land meets ice. And so those animals are way out where the ice meets the sea. So we did not see any animals.
Well, you talked a little bit about the creaks and the groans and, you know, having to do this before your body breaks down. How you approach this kind of thing changed mentally and emotionally as you've gotten older?
Right. You know, we have been endurance athletes for so many years that we learned a lot about recovery and taking care of our bodies. And over the years, we just have noticed that recovery takes longer than it used to. And you have to really be on top of that when you're trying to do something hard. And even as years have gone by, even past this adventure, I think the biggest learning is, you know, we can't push our bodies like we used to, but that doesn't mean we can't do the same difficult journeys. It's a matter of figuring out that balance of recovery and training more than ever before.
But do you have a greater degree of mental toughness now than you did, say, when you were younger and doing this kind of thing?
Absolutely, Helen. You know, I think that when you're younger, you kind of use your body more as far as pushing through and just, you know, that physicality. And when you're older, you're still using your body, but your mind is so much stronger and understands what it can do. I'm always surprised what my mind and body can do. And you set these difficult goals and you reach this place where you think you've reached your limit and your mind is able to take you further. Even though you think you want to stop, even though you think you have to stop, you don't have to if your body is still able to move. You know, it's like you haven't physically damaged your body. You think you can't go. And yes, your mind, as you age, is able to have that maturity to keep going.
To push through, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So from the sublime to the ridiculous, because I just figure my listeners are going to want to know, 48 days, like, what did you do when you had your period out there?
Yeah, I love that. That's a great question. That is a great question. I love that because, So much of what we talk about as women in the wild and the wilderness, we never cover this topic, right? And in my book, The Expedition, I cover it and get into great detail. And so basically, you know, the reality is 48 days, you're going to have your period. And I was at a point, I was 48 when I was going. So I was in the middle of kind of perimenopause, which if your listeners aren't aware, your body just starts changing and your period is not normal. And for me, normal meaning it becomes kind of irregular, unpredictable, and heavy bleeding. And so, gosh, you know, I really had to plan for this. So I just did a lot of research and figured out I didn't really want to carry all these supplies of tampons, et cetera, because you're going to be carrying them with you throughout the used ones. So I found this product called...
Yeah, because you're not leaving waste,
no,
right?
No, like, no.
That's sort of the goal when you're doing this kind
no,
of trek.
No, you definitely right. don't leave waste. So that's in your sled in a trash bag. So we used I used a product called the Diva Cup. And this is a silicone cup that you basically can reuse. And I really didn't know anything about this. And so months before leaving, I was testing it on my 10-hour training days of pulling sleds, or, you know, I actually pulled tires around on trails for 10 hours and used this product. And it worked. It really worked. So this is a product that you use and then you take out and you empty and then you sterilize with some hot water, boiling water, and then you reuse. And I did have a bit of a mishap in Antarctica with it at one point, but it worked out and everything worked great with that. So,
well, standard products can have mishaps too, so that's not that's not scary.
It was my own mishap because of the conditions we were under, but I figured it out. Yeah, and then, you know, we were also dealing with hot flashes going through menopause. So again, I don't know if people, your listeners, have gone through this, but for me, hot flashes sort of started in my chest and would just expand into my, especially on my head and body, and kind of just instantly want to sweat and feel
cold. Oh, God. Here, you take the lead now. You can melt the snow.
Oh, I'm telling you, and feeling like claustrophobic, but you're in a place where you can't, you know, take off clothing because you do not want to expose your skin to the air, which is, you know, you're 20 to 40 below. So that was a bit of a challenge.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. And especially at night that would happen. You're in your sleeping bag and you're cozy and then you have a hot flash and then you're...
Oh yeah. Those night sweats are the worst, right?
Then you're suffocating and you get out of your sleeping bag. Now you're freezing. So a disruptive sleep for sure.
So all of that, you still tell people that if they want to do this kind of adventure later in life, that they can.
So I do.
I don't want all of this stuff to be the cautionary tale about why you cannot. So tell me why you would encourage somebody to undertake something later in life like this.
I think that for all of us, there's no reason why we cannot continue having great adventures well into I don't even want to put an age limit on it, the rest of our lives. And it's really all about having the confidence and courage to step out of your known comfort zone, to push yourselves beyond what you think you can do. And if that's something that you imagine is exciting, if you feel pulled to do it, there's no reason why you shouldn't do that. There's plenty of people that don't want to go to the South Pole. It sounds cold and it sounds, you know, like something that they don't want to do. But there's something that is in each of us, I believe, that sounds exciting, that sounds interesting. And we can't use our age as an excuse. That oftentimes is just an excuse. And if we are pulled to do something, if we feel purpose behind it, if we feel excitement behind it, then go for it.
And do you feel like you have to do a different kind of approach? I mean, it almost sounds like as you age and the body starts declining and you're relying more heavily on that mental toughness you talked about, that you have to plan. Is it a different adventure? I mean, is it like, are you, okay, I'm going to do this South Pole walk, but maybe I'm going to take, instead of 48 days, maybe I need to take, you know, 58 or something. I mean, do you change that too? Or do you just go for it full out?
I really think that it depends on what your goal is. You know, there are people that were just going to the South Pole. This is the season right now. So there's some people that just arrived there, you know, like a week ago. And some of those people were in their late 40s. There was these two men in their 50s that went across the Arctic and set a new record. They went for like, I think it was 57. No, it was 80 days. It was crazy. These people, it depends on your level of physical fitness. Really, it does. And what you want to be able to accomplish. So if you just want to go and have the experience, you may not have as aggressive goals in the days, and you might take a few longer days. But there's this big balance, because that kind of activity requires, the longer the days, the more your body breaks down and the more supplies you have to carry. So there's this balance.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you have like a fallback? I mean, I'm not imagining that you necessarily had cell phone signals there. So what was your fallback if something went wrong?
There's definitely no cell phone signals, but we did carry a satellite phone, and a satellite phone does work there.
Got it.
And so what we did do is that we called a company that had flown us there, and they had small planes there at a base camp. And so we called them every day to tell them our location. And so we had a backup plan. If we did not call them by a certain time every single day, there was a protocol that they would put into practice, and then they would come and look for our last known destination. So,
oh, well, that's good. So go do an adventure, but don't be stupid.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely people who do things that don't have that backup plan. And you know, it really depends on their experience level and what they're comfortable with, right? And so, yeah, you know, I believe that we can all set out on whatever level we have of experience. And my husband and I vetted ourselves with guides and made sure that we weren't being crazy, and that we had the capabilities and the skill set to undertake safely this adventure. But yeah, there's always a level of risk.
You know, when you were describing the taking turns navigating, it really sounds kind of like a metaphor for marriage itself. And I'm curious what effects this adventure had on your marriage, and what you may have learned, and whether you're in a different place in the marriage before you started.
I love that you just said that. It's a metaphor for marriage. It's really true. And my husband and I met while climbing Denali in Alaska. We were on separate unguided trips. And so we met doing something we love in the outdoors. And then we eventually got together and got married. So we already had that as a seed in our marriage, that adventure was really a value of our marriage. And so we had all this experience together in the outdoors before going to the South Pole. So it wasn't like, hey, we're diving into something we've never done. But it was definitely harder than anything we'd ever done. So we leaned into the experience that we knew, you know, we had run like 24 to 30 hour trail runs together, where we would have one person lift you up when the other person's feeling down. What happened in this case was that we definitely hit a low for both of us, like personally, by about day 38, 39, where we just were at our lowest, mentally, physically, and we were not able to lift the other person up. What we learned about each other was, you know, we were at that lowest moment and exposed, you know, you almost feel like you were like nakedly exposed in this freezing place, nowhere to hide from yourself, yet you weren't able to help the other person. And we saw that we could still get through the most difficult of times together. And during those times, what actually happened was I reached through the phone lines with my satellite phone and called a really good friend to kind of give us that support. And we realized, you know, if we can't be there for each other, there are others who can fill the void for us, and your community and everybody else who loves you and supports you is there. We don't have to do it alone as just husband and wife when you hit those places,
that's really good.
Yeah. Which has really been helpful, you know, moving forward in our lives when you hit low spots, not out in the wilderness, you know, that has been a great help.
That's so interesting because, you know, there is one sort of school of thought in marriage that the person that you are, who's your partner or who you're married to, should be your person that you lean on. Mm-hmm. But you learned that in your most extreme times that you can't necessarily. And then was there was no blame attached, right? Like that you couldn't help each other and that you were reaching out to a third party. That was just the expedient thing to do, right?
Yeah, you're correct. There was no blame. There was, it was almost just a surrendering to like, I can't be there for you. I can barely be there for myself because you're in this survival mode. But in the end, when you get through that, when you're kind of in that low moment and then you move through it, you do, for us, it didn't break us at all. It bonded us. It's that camaraderie of getting through something together, even though you weren't the one who, you know, you ultimately have to help yourself. In many ways, I think that's true when we're at that lowest moment in any time in life. We can help, others can help us, but ultimately, you know, we're the ones who have to get through it, right? And I'm just going to tell you this from, this might not be something that you imagine I talk about, but 2 years after returning from this great journey, amazing, we discovered that my husband has cancer. And 4 years in, he is doing great. And
good to hear.
But he has stage 4 cancer. It's not affecting his life right now. He's working full time. He has no symptoms. Okay. But basically falling back to everything we've learned in the wild, everything we've learned about we can be there for each other and sometimes we can't. It still means we love each other more than ever, right? And that's what we learned in the wild has helped us get through the hardest challenge of our entire lives.
That's wonderful. And in a way, it's such a gift because in daily life, when people are at that point emotionally, there's so much subterfuge about, no, I'm fine or whatever. But, you know, I would imagine if you're out there and almost freezing to death, you got to get real.
That's true. That I really believe that. And I actually, what you just said, getting real with any challenge we have in life, we whether it's a health issue or a financial issue or whatever that issue is for individuals, especially as women, oftentimes we just do kind of default to that. Oh, I'm fine. You know, especially if you're somebody who's strong and wants to, you know, kind of be in control. I mean, ultimately, we're so not in control of so many things that affect our lives and kind of surrendering to that. But not giving in. It's just saying, I can't control. There's things I can control. There's things I cannot. And choosing how you want to be in life. I think that's what really a big thing that I learned about in my marriage and in my life.
Well, talk about the flip side of it, because that's when you need to know, when you need to ask for help, knowing that. But I would imagine you also found a great deal about courage.
Mm. Definitely, definitely. Courage was a thread from the minute that the idea even emerged as something we might want to attempt all the way through the journey and coming home. And I believe that courage comes up because of a fear. I mean, there's really not courage unless you're afraid of something, right?
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. So when something, when any of us are presented with an idea or something we may want to step into that is scary, there's fear. And I think fear is something that is an indicator that, well, either we're afraid because, I mean, it could, you know, we're afraid for our life. We got it. You know, there's that kind of fear. But most of our fears have to do with, it's scaring me personally. I don't know if I want to go there. I'm afraid of the unknown, or I'm afraid of being judged, or I'm afraid of, am I good enough? Can I do this? And for sure, all of those came up for this journey. I mean, from the minute that my husband brought up the idea, hey, what do you think about going to the South Pole? I mean, it just was fear. It wasn't like, oh, sure, let's go for it. It was, oh my goodness, that sounds really hard. I don't even know what that entails. We have a son, who at that, you know, when we went, he was 12. So as a mother, there was fears. So I believe that the courage came through when you are sitting there and saying, you know, what will this do for me? What's the why behind it? Why will I do this? And that helps us find the courage to pursue things that may not be socially acceptable to others. People might not understand why you want to do that, but if you understand why you want to do it, you know, that's what's most important.
Oh, I love that. I saw that you give talks on creative thinking, and I'm wondering how adapting in the wilderness has an impact on creativity, and whether that's something that carried through, or whether the creativity helped in the wilderness, or how that worked.
That is a super interesting question. So in my life, I lead creative problem solving sessions for companies and have done a lot of innovation work. And so I live in these two worlds. I live in this creative thinking and I live in the world of adventure, and they definitely overlap. And so I believe that they feed each other. I don't really know which one started, right? Which one started it's a circular thing. But when I'm out in the wild, what happens, even when I just go for a run on a trail and I can leave my office and just be out where I'm present. I think the biggest part of creativity is being present and not worrying about the past or what's happening in the future. You let your mind be present, and then this opening happens to what is there. So if you're trying to solve an issue or you're kind of working on something, I often find if I just get away, it just, your mind works on it in a more intuitive and free-flowing fashion. You come back and you're like fresh and ready to solve an issue. I think that happened out in Antarctica as well. There's just so much openness, so much time. Just your relationship with time changes, that there's not this to-do list. You're not constantly driving forward on your next task. You're moving forward in the wilderness, but once you kind of get on this autopilot, your mind can expand and open up to creativity. Definitely had a lot of creative moments.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because, you know, as a society, we are so used to being spoon-fed entertainment.
Mm.
And again, no cell phone signal. So what did you do to keep yourself from going feral?
I love that. That's a great question too. So there was a variety of things. As you can imagine, you are just in your head 10 hours a day. I'm a very social person. So to be in my head, it's windy, cold. I can't talk to my husband during the day while we're moving. So you're just in your head. So I would, you know, there were days where the weather was blasting wind and you're trying to find your way. So you are really focused. So you don't want to be distracted. Other times the weather's lovely and you're just kind of moving through the cold. So I would listen to audiobooks. I would listen to music for part of that time. And, you know, that filled the space. Sometimes honestly, early on, I wasn't comfortable with so much space and silence. I wasn't used to it. It was jarring. But as I progressed through the days and weeks, that was another way that I changed. I became comfortable with silence. I became comfortable with openness. I think sometimes we are uncomfortable because it forces us unconsciously to these thoughts come up that I actually was judging myself more than I realized. Why are you going so slow? Why do you feel bad? Why aren't you? These kind of things I noticed. I was like, wow, I am self-judging more than I realized. Then I kind of transformed at this moment of like, I got to drop this. I got to stop worrying about how fast it could be, why I don't feel good, and focus on what I can do, what I can accomplish today. And once I flipped that switch and noticed that about myself, everything became easier because of the way I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned so much about silence. I mean, this is something I wrote in my book that I just, it came to me as like, silence isn't to be filled, it's to be felt. And that realization really hit me as I was in my back home thinking about the experience, is that once you just kind of embrace that, those moments of being quiet so much, you're open up to so much, and things you might be covering up emerge, or things you want to be able to have time to think about
emerge. Oh, I love that. And for my listeners, we will, of course, have a link to the book. But I love that sentiment that silence is to be felt and not filled. I love that.
Thanks.
I think we're going to have to end it just because of time. But thank you so much for being on Keep It Juicy. And so what was the coldest it got? That's my other question, real fast.
The coldest that we recorded, because we had this little handheld thermometer, was 50 below.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I think that included wind chill. We sort of stick it out in the wind, and it tells you the wind, the temperature with the wind. And
that was our point, who cares?
I know, and that was our last day when we were heading to the bowl. It was like, great, you know, it's the last day, and it's not easy. It's going to be hard. So, yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Well, I admire you for doing it, but better you than me. Thank you so much for being on Keep It Juicy, Chris.
Thanks for having me. It's a great time chatting with you. I appreciate it.
If you want to read more about Chris and her journey, check out the Juicy Resources page on our website, keepitjuicy.com. Next week, I'm debuting Keep It Juicy Charleston with a very special guest. You're going to want to listen, even if you're not from Charleston. You can keep up with us on Facebook or Twitter at keepitjuicy.com, or go to my website and sign up for the newsletter. Meanwhile, go out there and keep it juicy.